On this episode of Serverless Chats, I speak with Brett McGowan about serverless containers on Google Cloud Run. This is Serverless Chats, episode number 22. Hi everyone, I'm Jeremy Daly and you're listening to Serverless Chats. This week I'm chatting with Brett McGowan. Hi Brett, thanks for joining me.
Happy to be here, thanks for having me.
So you are a developer advocate for serverless at Google Cloud. So why don't you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself and sort of what's going on with Google Cloud?
Yeah, absolutely. So my background is I was a software engineer for a long time. I worked at another cloud company called Rackspace as a software engineer working on some of their networking stuff. Kind of have a long history of being a full stack developer from e-commerce platforms to startups and stuff like that. And so in one of my previous roles at Rackspace, actually, we started working on tools for developers to actually consume the Rackspace cloud. So that was doing things like writing tutorials and guides and useful videos and, you know, giving talks to teach people about it. And then turns out there's actually a whole job that does that full time. And so that's kind of what led me into being a developer advocate at Google.
Great. And so Google Cloud, I think most people know what Google is, but Google Cloud is a public cloud provider, right?
Yes. So Google Cloud is kind of an umbrella term for, and there's sort of two halves to it. One is what used to be called, or it's called G Suite. And so that's like Google Docs and Gmail and Google Sheets and things that your business uses and kind of like your frontline like knowledge workers use to like put stuff in spreadsheets and send emails and all that. And so that's the G Suite half of Google Cloud. And then the other half of Google Cloud is Google Cloud Platform. And that's like the public cloud, like, you know, databases and virtual machines, if I'm allowed to say that on your podcast, and, you know, serverless tools and things like that, right? So when you build your application, like these are the tools you use. It's a Google Cloud Platform, and that's what I focus on, serverless specifically.
Awesome. All right. So in terms of the developer advocate position, because you hear developer advocate and developer evangelist and all these different things, depends on which cloud or you know, which provider you're talking to. So I know these roles are a little bit different at different organizations. So what exactly is a developer advocate at Google Cloud?
Yeah, so we have sort of two jobs. And the first people probably are more familiar with because it's a little more public facing. And that's we do things like I was just talking about, go out and teach people about Google Cloud, how to solve problems. But kind of more broadly than that, just to help developers be successful. And so whether that's on Google Cloud or not, you know, our mandate is a little bit different, right? It's to help developers solve problems that they're having. And you know, maybe with Google Cloud, but maybe not. And so we do that again through blogs and videos and in-person talks and customer meetings and stuff like that. And then the other half, which I think is maybe less common, but super, super important, is to be a funnel of input from the community into the Google Cloud Platform team. So, you know, I work with the product managers and the engineers to help deliver feedback like, hey, here's what I'm seeing that folks are struggling it with when they use certain tools, or here's the categories of problems that I see people trying to do with serverless. And, you know, I go to a lot of events and talk to a lot of folks. And so kind of being that funnel of input. So part of my job is to hear, you know, really specifically on Google Cloud, what works well and what doesn't, but also, hey, maybe I tried using Google Cloud and like I can't because this whole feature isn't working the way that I expect it to, or it's completely missing, or, you know, my workload isn't a good fit for this reason. And so that's part of my job. And so really want to, you know, make sure your listeners know if they have questions about Google Cloud or they want to see things changed, like, please let me know, like, happy to hear it. And, you know, helps me make a lot of times I'm maybe saying some of the same things already, but it always helps to have someone who's a customer or potential customer, you know, that carries weight because that usually also carries dollars.
Awesome. All right. So I have seen you speak about this thing called Google Cloud Run a number of times. And you know, I'm sort of in the AWS ecosystem. That's mostly what, you know, that's where I'm the most comfortable with. But I gotta say, Google Cloud Run looks awesome. And I really like how it's sort of this different approach to serverless. So maybe you could give the listeners an overview of what Google Cloud Run is, you know, just so they know what it's all about.
Sure. So Cloud Run is a serverless platform on Google Cloud that's based around containers. And we'll go into a little bit more about what exactly a container is. But the short version is it lets you move a lot more of your existing workloads into a serverless environment. I know a lot of us, you know, we're working at jobs where we'd love to start brand new projects and do everything with FAS functions first and really make this cool, awesome distributed system. But the reality is a lot of us work at organizations that have existing products and services that maybe we wrote before serverless was a thing. So containers basically let you specify what kind of runtime, what kind of libraries, what kind of language, whatever you want in a very standard way. And so if you can take a lot of these existing applications, especially if they're stateless, and wrap them in this container. And so you can move existing workloads onto a serverless platform without having to rewrite everything as functions as a service. And so I think this is, you know, if you're a purist, whether that's fully serverless or not, I don't know. But I think we all can agree we want to move more workloads more serverlessly as quickly as possible. And so Cloud Run, I think, really opens up a whole set of new workloads that you can run on serverless outside of just, you know, moving pieces one at a time to serverless functions.
I think people hear containers and they get a little bit, you know, they think that's starting to move away from serverless. And under normal circumstances, I would tend to agree with that because you're talking about, you know, using some sort of orchestration system to manage all that. And we can talk about Kubernetes in a minute. But what I really like about Google Cloud Run is it's serverless containers. And I know that seems kind of strange, but maybe you could explain that a little bit more.
Yeah, and maybe we should have done a warning at the beginning of the podcast that I'm gonna, you know, I sometimes say this in my talks. We're gonna use some words that may be offensive to some of your listeners. So we're gonna say Kubernetes, we're gonna say virtual machines, we're gonna say offline, we're gonna say infrastructure. And so just a word of warning. I don't know if you can bleep these out on your podcast, but no, just kidding. Yeah, so I think that there has kind of always been this tension in the serverless community with containers, and I think part of that is due to the popularity of Kubernetes. And Kubernetes, as you mentioned, is an orchestration system for containers. But part of the problem is Kubernetes is not meant for developers. It's super popular and has a lot of sort of buzzword behind it, but it's designed for sort of ops and the DevOps and, you know, the SREs of the world to like make their jobs easier, to help run and orchestrate and do things like health checks and, you know, rescheduling your jobs to different machines, to different nodes when they die and their problems. But containers, while Kubernetes runs containers, they're not synonymous, right? You know, you can actually just think of containers as a packaging mechanism. It's just a way to sort of declaratively say, here's what my runtime environment looks like. Here's the base operating system. Here's some certain libraries I want installed. I want this version of, you know, Node.js, and I want these, 3D rendering libraries included or whatever. And I guess maybe to take just a quick step back to talk about what are containers, just really briefly, obviously, this is like a whole deep topic of discussion, but it's sort of like a really lightweight declarative way to package and to run your apps like a virtual machine, but it is not a virtual machine. So it essentially compiles your application, so your application code and kind of the runtime you describe with it into this deployable unit, and so you can deploy it to, you know, your laptop, to staging, to production. And it includes, again, not just your code that it's running, but also the underlying operating system and dependency. So it's really, really reproducible and really, really portable because you're actually executing it in sort of this quote unquote virtualized environment that's abstracted or that's isolated from the actual environment that it's running in. So I think to kind of bring it back to how does serverless and containers relate, because a lot of the tension was running containers in Kubernetes is not serverless. So how can we actually put those together? And I think one way to think of it is when you're deploying your functions as a service, like almost no matter what platform you're running on, it's going to take your code and it's going to create a container out of it. And that's actually the unit behind the scenes that your cloud provider or your ops team is using to scale it up and down. Now, you as a developer may never see it. You may never know or want to know anything about it. But if you think about it, like, why not also give the developers ability to just give the container directly. And that way you can customize it to look exactly how you want as a developer or an operator. And so I actually think they can play really nicely because it's just sort of skipping that first step where your cloud provider or your tooling is creating the container for you. And you can actually create it yourself, if that makes sense, right? Like, I don't want to say like doing containers is a better way. It's just for some people, it is. There are a lot of benefits with portability and independence. I talked to a lot of developers who are really concerned about vendor lock-in and things. Containers is an open standard. There's a huge ecosystem out there around building containers from, you know, every major CI/CD system. There are like published like gold container images from certain organizations. So there's like an official Python image, you know, official Node.js image. There's all these like official published images that you can kind of inherit from, start from, and you know that base image has been tested and vetted and sort of approved. And so there's a really vibrant ecosystem around containers. But to finish my point, it's not necessarily better for everyone. There are some advantages, you know, pros and cons to everything. It's you give up a little bit more ease of use, but you gain some flexibility and control in response.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, when it comes to FaaS, and whether that's Lambda functions or Azure functions or even Google Cloud functions, there is that really nice sort of, I don't have to do anything. I just have to write a little bit of code, put that in there, and then it sort of does everything for me. But you run into limitations with that, and I know I run into limitations with that, where you want to use some sort of package or some sort of some sort of binary that you want to run behind the scenes. And it's getting a little bit easier with Lambda, with layers and some of that other stuff there. But sometimes if you want to bring it down a level and you want to have the ability to, you know, sort of package and run very specific applications, containers allow you to do that. And to go back to that whole serverless thing, this is not like Fargate, if people are familiar with Fargate, where you're still sort of scheduling containers. But this is when requests come in, these spin up just like Google Cloud functions or Lambda functions or Azure functions. So this isn't about having to schedule a whole bunch of them to run. This just happens automatically for you.
Yeah, exactly. And I think one of the things that maybe we can talk a bit about is a lot of people focus on sort of what's different, like how serverless containers is different than FaaS. But there's actually, in my opinion, probably more in common, more as it's not, that's not different, right? That's the same. So, you know, like you said, it scales similarly. So it scales down to zero, which is maybe something that your other like sort of container platforms and tools don't do. So it's serverless in that way. It scales up by creating multiple copies. So you have like your code needs to be stateless, right? So that's similar. You don't manage the infrastructure. So that's also common. I think the difference is though, you do take on managing the runtime. So you do take on saying like, okay, I do want to have like specify my node version. I'm now responsible for knowing what is the right node version, which can also be good because maybe you're like, please don't upgrade like the version of Node without me like approving it, because I'm willing to take the risk that like some performance enhancements come along or security patch happens, but I need to know that my app is not changing out from under me. And so again, that's important to some people. But the actual underlying infrastructure, sort of right, like the networking and the creating of the nodes and the machines, like that's all virtual machines, that's all transparent as well. Things like scaling down to zero, but then it being able to scale new instances in milliseconds, like really quickly, that's similar. You set timeouts similarly, mm-hmm. like, oh, I want this to run for, you know, 6 minutes or whatever as a maximum, that's similar. You still have the issue of cold starts because you're creating those new instances. I think maybe containers can have some answers there, which we can get into as well. But a lot of it looks very similar to the functions as a service, just with the added thing of you're also taking on managing that runtime.
So let's talk about infrastructure for a second. So again, maybe you want to block your kids' ears if they're in the car with you, but Google Cloud Run does run on Kubernetes, right? But you don't have to manage the underlying Kubernetes when you're running this though, right?
So Cloud Run actually comes in two different platforms. One is the fully managed. So this is where you are not aware of any of the actual underlying infrastructure. Hey, here's my container, go nuts. But there's also a version called Cloud Run for Anthos, which runs actually on Kubernetes. So the fully managed version is, I don't know how much we talk about how, what exactly we use to run it, but it's not really Kubernetes that we run it on. It's the same serving infrastructure actually that we use for like Google Cloud Functions. So it is not Kubernetes. The version called Cloud Run for Anthos, which we can talk about later, like does actually run on Kubernetes. So the idea here is they have compatibility at the like container contract level, which basically means your container needs to listen to traffic on, you know, a defined port. And that's basically it. And there's a project called Knative, which is like this open source standard. And so the Cloud Run, the fully managed Cloud Run is completely compatible with the Cloud Run that runs on Kubernetes and Cloud Run for Anthos because of these Knative standards. So like the APIs are similar, like the container contracts are similar. The difference being the version that runs on Kubernetes and / Knative, you could potentially take Knative and you can run it on wherever you want, like on premise or in your laptop or whatever. And so that's, people do like that because even if the fully managed version of Cloud Run is easiest to use and to set up, and it's probably the right answer for a lot of folks listening to this because it's the most sort of serverless. You don't install, do you have any knowledge of anything Kubernetes, but people want to know like, okay, if Cloud Run ends up not being a great option, or I have like really specific needs, I have to actually run this in my data center. Then between Cloud Run for Anthos and Knative, it gives you that open source portability and flexibility.
Great. And so what about actually connecting to these things too? So with Lambda or Azure or even Google Cloud Functions, you have events and you have the ability to use like API gateways or HTTPS connections. So what are your options for connecting to the applications running on Google Cloud Run?
So right now it's all over HTTP. So that means it's a good fit for like sort of your external facing applications. But we also sort of with security controls, you can set it up so that, okay, this isn't actually open and accessible to the internet. And using HTTP, you can talk to our pub/sub system, which I guess that's similar. Is that like SQS or SNS? I forget. I always get those confused.
SNS is more like the pub/sub. Yeah. SQS is the queue.
Okay. Yeah. So like an SNS equivalent where there's like these events that get published internally within Google Cloud that can feed into pub/sub. And then so that could then push into Cloud Run or push into, you know, whatever. It's like, think of it as a fan out mechanism. And you can set that up to be secured, but it'll still works over HTTP. So your function signature actually looks the same, whether you're responding to an event or responding to an HTTP request. The difference being like, what does the payload look like that you get?
Cool. All right. So what about the developer experience? Because this is the other thing too, where, you know, whether you're just uploading a snippet of code, obviously you need to upload a Docker container that has your code packaged in it. So how do you do that with Cloud Run?
Yeah. So I think one other thing that is a little more of something to think about when you're developing for Cloud Run and containers is, yeah, you don't just say, hey, here's my source code, like go nuts. You need to take this Docker file, turn it into a container, which is basically, again, like a compilation process. And then you need to like publish that to some registry somewhere so that Cloud Run or whatever is that's running your container knows like where to pull this from. It's kind of this, you know, you publish it. And so we have a tool at Google Cloud called Google Container Registry, but there's also like Docker Hub and a bunch of these other repositories. So there's that additional step and really kind of maybe two additional steps of compile your container, turn it from like a Docker file into an actual image, and then publishing that image. And then when you deploy to Cloud Run, you say, okay, use this deployed image. So there's a couple of extra steps there. Now, one of the things you can do, like I'm an app developer, I'm not an ops person. So like I want to do as little of that as possible. So a couple of things you can do. One, you can just script it, right? Because it's pretty much the same thing. It's like, okay, take my container, compile it, publish it. And Docker is smart enough to know like, oh, all he did was change these couple of lines in the source code. Like I don't need to rebuild the whole container. I can start from the previous step and just sort of redeploy the code into the container image. And so that will speed it up. But there are also tools that actually will build these containers for you. So a lot of folks have probably used Heroku or Pivotal, and a lot of, you know, that platform is you can use it source code based, right? Like, take my code. Hey, Heroku, hey, Pivotal, you build my container for you, whatever you need to do, I don't care. So they actually collaborated and they created a project called BuildPax, which is now kind of governed in open, the CNCF, the Cloud Native Computing Foundation. And so that's like an open source standard now, these BuildPax. And one of the main ways that BuildPax are useful is to take source code and turn it into a compiled and potentially deployed container without you having to write a Docker file or know anything about it. Now, in full transparency, like, I've used these build packs a bit. They're still a work in progress. Like, I think it's you still kind of have to know what it's expecting and you know, structure your app appropriately. But it's open source. It's come a long way. You can create your own custom build packs so that again, you as a developer don't have to know what a Docker file looks like. It sort of will write it and compile it for you. And then some programming languages have this built in. So Java has a project called Jib. Go has a project called Co that just because languages know the most about themselves, like, they can kind of more intelligently build and publish or build these containers for you. So so I would say the developer experience, you know, it is a little bit more to do than just here's my source code in Go. But I think that it's headed in the right direction because I think, again, as an app developer, I don't want to have to mess with it. But again, from the ops perspective, ops people like having that Docker file. They like having that container because it's auditable, right? So if I say, hey, build pack or Jib, whatever, go build this for me, it's useful, but God only knows what it actually is creating. I mean, it's probably fine, but you know, but if you're talking to your security team, they're going to say, well, what is it doing? And you're going to say, well, I don't know, but look how easy it is to use. And so they like having that auditable Docker file because they can go through line by line. It's installing this dependency. It's from this operating system. It's installing this, you know, security library. Oh, okay. That's an old version. We need to update that. And so that's, again, it's all about trade-offs. So
sure.
I think one of the messages I want to kind of get across is that, maybe moving to something like containers and Cloud Run, it feels like you're taking on way more than like just getting started with functions as a service, right? Your Lambdas, your Azure functions, your Cloud functions. And there is a little bit more to manage. I don't think it's a huge amount of overhead, but I think what this really does is it enables a lot of your like existing workloads to start to be serverless, because we all have apps that we started before serverless was a thing. And we would love, even if it's not perfect, we would love to get them to be serverless.
Yeah, totally makes sense. All right. So one of the things that, you know, going back to the serverless containers thing, it does enable, like you said, different types of workloads that you can do. And one of the things that's really, really interesting to me is the concurrency model here. And with Lambda functions and with Azure functions, it's a sort of one concurrent connection is one instance. I think Google Cloud functions might have two sometimes randomly or something like that, but it is radically different with Cloud Run. So can you explain how concurrency works?
Yeah, so Cloud Run enables concurrency. So if you don't want it, you can just set concurrency to one and then it will behave like exactly as you said with like Cloud functions or Lambda functions, where it's an instance only handles one request at a time. And that obviously has a lot of advantages in terms of like how you reason about it and simplicity, because you just know if I have a, you know, 256 meg function and it's handling a request, I have 256 megs available to me, right? Well, with some caveats. But the problem is, and we see this with customers a lot, actually, they get started on Cloud functions. Everything is great, super easy to use. They put more and more workload, they put more and more traffic into their Cloud functions. And eventually they come to us and they're like, hey, this is actually starting to get quite expensive. And I think that's something that maybe I wasn't expecting, or we don't talk a lot about, because of the really big cost benefits you get from serverless when it's very spiky workloads. You think like, oh, it's always cheaper. But actually, a lot of times under a heavy workload, it can be expensive, especially compared to just like raw compute or something, right? So one of the things like web frameworks have been good at and been working on for a long, long time is handling concurrency and really being able to handle a ton of requests from a limited number of instances. So Cloud Run lets you address that by saying, okay, instead of concurrency one, why don't I say, I can say concurrency 10, 15, 30, 80, right? So that tells Cloud Run, watch this container, you can send up to 30, 40, or 50 requests to it. Cloud Run will monitor the resource usage in that container. So if it sees, okay, it's busy, I probably don't want to send any more requests to it. Even if it hasn't hit that threshold, then it'll kind of do the cold start thing and create a new instance and redirect traffic to it. But concurrency is nice because you actually can get massive savings in reduction in cold starts, because in the ideal world, like, it goes from handling one request at a time to 80 requests at a time. That in theory is, you know, one cold start versus 80. Now, obviously that is like a very academic, that extreme, but you know, even if you cut your cold start requests by a third, a fifth, right? That can be a really significant improvement, especially if you're doing something like a web app, right? Where it's user facing and you really want to minimize those occasional cold starts because a user actually feels that pain and you want to minimize that as much as possible. So it has a couple of advantages with concurrency. One, which is performance. So fewer instances created. And then the other thing is from the billing perspective, because essentially where an instance, you pay as long as the instance is hot and serving traffic rather than of one particular request, which means, again, if you're just reserving one request at a time, your billing looks basically similar to like your Lambdas and Cloud Functions of the world, where it's just pay exactly as long as it's handling one request. But since you can have concurrency, while it's handling that one request, if another request comes in, it handles it, finishes it. Maybe a third request comes in, handles it, finishes it, all while that first request is happening, you actually pay the same. As long as there is one request being handled, it doesn't matter how many other requests are also being handled, it's the same billing. And so you actually can see pretty significant financial savings because you're taking advantage of, again, what these web frameworks have become really good at doing, which is handling concurrency within an instance. And so that's nice. Now, it's not all like for free in terms of developer experience and productivity, because as a developer, you actually now have to be aware of, oh, I could have other requests come in while I'm handling this. So I don't have complete access to this instance. So, you know, kind of the things we deal with around, you know, being thread safe and making sure I don't use too many resources because it'll impact other requests coming in. You have to be aware of that. Now, I think that's important, but I also think that we have years and years of experience. I always say it may not be a well understood problem, but it is a well Stack Overflowed problem. So yeah. There are just tons of help around like, okay, here's how you can help solve these concurrency issues in your application. But again, if you don't even want to mess with it, set your concurrency to one and it will behave exactly like your Cloud Functions does now. So,
but I do think that it actually does give you a huge advantage. I mean, not just from the billing perspective, but also from the type of applications that you are building. I mean, if you're building something that needs to respond within, 50 milliseconds or something even less than that, if you have to, as soon as one of these containers spins up and you've got the concurrency set to 80, you immediately can handle 80 users. And I'm assuming the system is probably smart enough that as the traffic continues to build up, that it probably starts spinning up new containers and kind of getting those sort of ready to go. Yep. But I think that is a much different approach. I mean, even with Lambda functions, you have this initial scaling boost, and then it scales, I think, additional 500 concurrent invocations every 5 minutes or something like that. So, so you do have some of these scaling problems where you kind of have to warm things up, beforehand. So I think that's really, really, really interesting way that works. So what are some of these applications? Like, why would I maybe use Cloud Run versus just using regular Fast beyond the billing side of things?
Yeah. And I think, and we touched on this a little bit earlier, but I think part of it is really helps you with applications that were not designed as brand new greenfield applications once, serverless and Lambda and Cloud Functions and Azure Functions were established, right? So I've got this web app and I would love to move it to serverless but it's got a bunch of endpoints, or I've got an API, right? And I've got a bunch of endpoints built into this API. It's got like shared libraries within the code base. And sure, I guess, and I would love to be able to tease these out and just slowly move them to different functions, if that's the way that I want to do that. But it already exists. It's useful. It's going to be real hard to convince management to change this. But if I couldn't take that and move that serverlessly to a serverless like environment platform, that would be great, because now I get all the characteristics of no longer having to manage infrastructure, you know, the scaling and billing that we talked about. And so I think for user facing web applications, for APIs, things like that, that have a lot of, I guess maybe we can use the word monolith. There's sort of these monolithic applications. Sure. Like that really helps create this environment to run them in. So that's one thing. And then the other is just if you have applications that just aren't supported by your cloud providers, like languages or libraries and things, and you just want to be able to customize that runtime environment. So Cloud Run is there as well. And also if you need to be able to take, if you need your application to be portable. So I want to run it in Cloud Run. Okay, everything's working great, but now I also want to run it or some version of it in my data center, because I have these constraints. So I have these legal requirements, or I have hardware requirements needs, right? So I need GPUs. I need, I actually have to have 8 cores, and I need, you know, X amount of RAM. That's not provided by the sort of the shapes that my provider gives you. Like Cloud Run, in its platforms, like gives you that flexibility. And so it actually opens up a whole big workload, a whole big world of new workloads that you can run serverlessly that aren't just functions as a service. And then I guess the last thing would be, and is if you're already running stuff on Kubernetes and it's in containers and you don't have a lot of the complex sort of scheduling requirements maybe that you need Kubernetes for, like it's a container based, right? Just run it in Cloud Run. And so it's a much, much easier way to get your containers actually up and running and serving traffic without having to manage necessarily a Kubernetes cluster.
Yeah, and I think that's an interesting point too about things like GPUs or any sort of special hardware requirements, because certainly that is something that can become a limitation or is a limitation on most platforms right now. So you still would have to run your own Kubernetes cluster if you wanted to have the benefits of things like GPUs. But you could basically have a very portable workload that you could move back and forth between sort of a managed and in your own clusters.
Yep.
So let's talk about this Knative thing, because I think there's a lot of confusion with Kubernetes versus Knative and how much work you have to do. And Knative's the serverless fast component for Kubernetes or whatever. So just take a second, explain what Knative is, just in case people don't know.
Yeah, so Knative is an open source project. It was started by Google and some other partners like Red Hat and Pivotal and Trigger Mesh and IBM, all contributing to basically put a layer on top of Kubernetes to show to a developer a more serverless environment. So as a developer, if I'm deploying to a public cloud, you know, like AWS or Azure or Google, I don't care what Google's like ops team has to do it, right? That's the whole sort of point of serverless. But there's a lot of use cases, which we can talk about, where you can't use public cloud or you can't use the particular platform that they offer you because there's some limitation. It would be nice if as a developer, I could still deploy to this serverless tool. It happens to be managed by my ops team behind the scenes. But as a dev, it looks the same to me. I deploy it, it scales up, scales down, gives me all of those same characteristics that I'm used to. But my ops team is doing that. And so Kubernetes by itself is if you've ever written it, you just quickly drown in a sea of YAML configuration files, and like really managing Kubernetes is hard. Like it is a full-time job, at least. And so you don't want to take that on directly, even as a developer, even if someone's already set it up for you. Using it as a developer, especially as a serverless developer, because we've sort of seen the holy grail of like, yes, this is what we want the experience to look like. Exactly. You still don't want to set up all these configuration files and, you know, create a deployment and a service and you know, creating pods and all of this stuff. So Knative is an attempt to put a layer on top of Kubernetes to start moving in that direction. And you can use Knative directly. You can just deploy. There's a utility called KN. And so you just can do KN deploy and deploys into your Kubernetes cluster running Knative. It's a really nice experience. The philosophy behind Knative, though, was not actually to create like an open source FAS that runs on Kubernetes. It was actually to have these standardized building blocks for pieces that serverless platforms use that's not maybe built into Kubernetes. And so by way of example, there's, I can't remember last count, but let's say there's 20 plus open source FAS platforms out there that run on Kubernetes, because Kubernetes gives you all these nice benefits of like, you know, scheduling and resiliency and all of that.
Sure.
But there's a bunch of stuff that everyone is just building again from scratch. So everyone is building a building component where it goes from source code to deployable container. Everyone is building a serving component, which is, okay, a request comes in. How do I route it to which version of my code is running? Do I have multiple versions? What percentage of traffic gets what? And so everyone is sort of building that piece. And then like eventing, everyone is sort of building some eventing thing. And so Knative was an attempt to say, okay, let's just all build this together collaboratively. And then your like value add as a serverless platform sits on top of that. So by way of example, SAP, right? They wanted to give a serverless experience to their developers, but you can't say like, oh, hey, SAP developer, just deploy to AWS Lambda, deploy to Google Cloud. Like, right, there's just no integration. They are already building a platform. So they can build a platform on top of Knative that looks and feels like SAP and has all the idioms that SAP uses, and it feels very natural to an SAP developer. And they don't have to rewrite all the building, serving, and eventing piece for them. So if you're going to build a platform as a service, a serverless one, Knative gives you a lot of really, really, really useful building blocks to build on top of. Again, you can use it directly. It's not really designed for that, but it's fine and it will work. And I think maybe the bigger takeaway, if you're in the context of Cloud Run, is, you know, Cloud Run is compatible with Knative. And so what that means is, if I'm like, I'm just sick of Google Cloud, I want out, you know, or maybe more realistically, I management has shifted priorities and we're going on premise, whatever. My app doesn't have to change much because Knative essentially gives me that escape hatch, right? So if I'm worried about vendor lock-in and that sort of a thing, like I can take my containers and I can run them on Knative in a very, very similar way to Cloud Run without having to like rewrite and re-architect the application. So that's and then I guess even more concretely, I mentioned before, there's Cloud Run, which is fully managed, and then there's Cloud Run for Anthos, which runs Anthos is a whole like other topic, but it's kind of this suite of Google Cloud tools based around Kubernetes that you can run on premise in Google Cloud and any other cloud. And there's a whole bunch of things that you can sort of enable within it, and one of them is Cloud Run. And so when you enable Cloud Run there, it is running in a Kubernetes cluster on Knative. So it is actually running on Kubernetes on Knative. And then Cloud Run is just that little layer on top that's like the developer experience part, just so it feels the same.
Yeah.
But now once you're in Kubernetes, you can more likely your ops or your DevOps team has access to all the knobs and switches that Kubernetes has with, again, GPUs and CPUs and custom networking and custom scaling, like never scale below this number, or, you know, like I have predictive, I can add logic sort of at almost any of these decision points where Kubernetes is managing your application. Someone in your team can do that for you. So, yeah.
All right. I mean, that does sound like it's getting into the weeds quite a bit.
Yes.
So for serverless developers, again, I think staying up at that Cloud Run level is probably where most of us would want to stay. So the other thing, and we haven't talked about this too much, but Cloud Functions, right? Google Cloud Functions. So obviously they're different than Cloud Run because it's, you know, they're more a more traditional FAS or fully managed FAS. So what's sort of the difference between the Cloud Run and then just the normal Google Cloud Functions?
Right. So I think I would say, especially for the serverless audience, you know, that's listening, and maybe for the general developer, look at Cloud Functions. It has a lot of constraints, as we all know, just FAS in general does. And I don't mean that negatively. If that works for your workload, it might still make sense actually just to start there. It is a simpler experience. based on the philosophy of it, if nothing else, you're just going to have smaller pieces to manage. It's just easier to get started. And so what we actually see a lot of customers do is start in Cloud Functions because the language they want is supported. They're not dealing with huge existing monoliths. And then if you start to grow out of it, either because your code base is getting too big, you're starting to like put a monolith into this function or whatever, or you start to need custom runtimes, hardware, fill in the blank, or it starts to get expensive, right? And sort of like, I'm handling a lot of traffic and I'm experiencing too many cold starts. Okay, now maybe you can look at going to Cloud Run. So if you aren't already using containers, I still think Cloud Functions is probably an easier way to get started. And probably, then there's no reason you can't stay there. It works well. Like, you know, we have a ton of folks using it, and it might be just sort of, if you grow out of it, then you can move to Cloud Run. If you have needs that containers address, so again, your security team is like, we need to be able to audit what is your runtime environment. We need to be able to control it with containers, or we need to be able to deploy your app to Cloud Run, Kubernetes, on-prem. We want like the benefits of those containers. Then obviously you would want to start with Cloud Run. And then I would say the other difference currently is Cloud Functions has more, I guess, built-in integration with Google Cloud Events. So things like our Firestore serverless database, you know, Cloud Functions will natively integrate with, hey, whenever a database record is changed or inserted or updated, you know, run a Cloud Function. So to do that with Cloud Run requires a little bit more work, and also requires injecting this PubSub service in the middle, which it's fine and it works. It's just, it's more work. And so I think hopefully we'll have a little better eventing story around Cloud Run. But right now, if you're doing a lot of events, responding to stuff to events in GCP, in Google Cloud Platform, then Cloud Functions is probably a better fit, right? So responding to a file getting uploaded or database change record in Firestore or something like that.
Awesome. All right, so let's talk about that then, the sort of the future of serverless in Google or Google Cloud, because every major cloud provider, you've got Twilio building Cloud Functions, you've got Netlify, you've got Zeit, you've got all these different independent, there's like four new platforms and serverless development platforms that just launched, I think, in the last couple of weeks. It's kind of crazy where, obviously, the word serverless is way overused and it's probably quite meaningless at this point. But I think, you know, for some of us who still believe in it, you know, this is the future, right? This is sort of the way things are going to be built. This is the developer experience I think a lot of people want, this fully managed aspect of it, this idea of whether it's on-demand scaling and scaling down to zero or paying for value, however you want to say it. So what does the future of serverless look like at Google?
Yeah, so if you'll allow me to have a little bit of hyperbole for a minute, I think, but I do like the philosophy that our team has around this, which is, you know, we love serverless, right? So I think the direction that Google is headed with serverless is we want to be able to serverless anything, run it anywhere, and integrate with anything, right? So serverless anything, run it anywhere, integrate with anything is a pretty audacious goal. And you know, realistically, will that ever happen? I don't know. I'm an engineer, so I'm allowed to actually be realistic here. But I love the philosophy of it. And that's sort of this like multi-pronged approach of Cloud Run, which is super easy to manage. But then I have some requirements, right, that don't fit that. Okay, well, we still want to serverless you. Okay, so now we have Cloud Run for Anthos, and that runs on top of Kubernetes and Knative. So you can move it there, and hopefully, yeah, it's a little bit less serverless because you have, or it's a lot less serverless for somebody because you're managing your Kubernetes infrastructure. But we still want to keep like some part of it serverless for the developers. And then even if you aren't even using Cloud Run, not even on Anthos, on GCP or anywhere, okay, well, Knative is now this thing where you can still take those same workloads. It's open source, Kubernetes runs virtually anywhere, and you can move it. And so I think being able to run on different clouds, different environments, different platforms, and then because it's containers, you can turn into a serverless application by wrapping it in a container. You know, at least as of now, assuming it's sort of stateless and some of those like general caveats, but and then integrate with anything. And so Cloud Events is an effort by the Cloud Computing Cloud Native Computing Foundation to standardize like what do event packages and payloads look like. And that's built into the Knative spec from the beginning. And so being able to respond to like GitHub events and have that, have your response run in anywhere, right? GCP or otherwise, I think is, it's a nice goal. And I think, you know, we're making really good progress. Knative is developing really, really quickly. And so, I do like that philosophy again. And also if nothing else, if you're a serverless dev and you're like, hey, I don't care about any of that, at least just know sort of Knative and those tools that, you know, that resonates well with your management, right? You can say like, let's do this. Let's use Cloud Run. It's super easy to use. And, but here's the thing, boss or boss's boss, like we can leave, right? Like we can take this and we can run Knative in our own data center or on whatever cloud, and our workloads don't have to change. And I know that that appeals quite a bit to sort of the management types who are worried about lock-in, whereas you're, as a developer, maybe I don't care, right? I want the tool that lets me build as quickly as possible. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. So speaking about some of those tools as well, I mean, it's not just, you know, it's not all Kubernetes all the time. It's not just, you know, or Google Cloud Functions. There are a bunch of other, you know, sort of quote serverless tools that you have available. You have BigQuery, you've got, you know, some of the ML engines that you have, your PubSub you mentioned, Cloud Task, things like that. You know, so I don't know, maybe just a second, like the suite of serverless offerings at Google, you know, how do you kind of pitch that, I guess?
Yeah, and there's a lot. And I think starting back in 2008, before serverless was even a word, we had a project called, and we still have it, it's massively successful, called App Engine. And App Engine, if you want to think of it, it sits in the middle between Cloud Run and Cloud Functions. I love App Engine. And in a way, you can sort of think of it as it's like Cloud Run without having to do containers. So if purely just the container part of it you hate, like Cloud Run or App Engine is nice because you can deploy like an existing Node.js app, an existing Python Flask app, and it just scales serverlessly your web app with the same sort of scare. It has concurrency. It has similar scaling characteristics of scaling down to zero, but you don't even have to mess with containers. And so I love App Engine. It's probably one of my favorite products on Google Cloud. And then, so that's kind of the three pieces of compute for Google Cloud serverless. And you mentioned databases. We have Firestore, which is like a document-based data store, sort of like your MongoDB equivalent, but it's, yeah, it, one thing that's nice there is it's intended to be directly integrated with, or can be directly integrated and to talk to mobile and web apps, like the clients directly talk to the database by design, which lets you, again, part of serverless is productivity and like only spending time on business values. And how many of us have built an app and the whole freaking app is just some front end, an API layer, and a database. And so you have the front end talks to the API. API says, okay, this request looks good. It talks to the database, gets the data back, returns it to the front end or whatever, right? So there's whole categories of applications now where that little API layer just disappears.
Yeah.
And you just have the app talking directly to the database, which is scary for a lot of people, but actually works really well. There's a whole suite of like security rules and auth and stuff like that built into it. So I'm a big, big fan. So Firestore came out of a marriage of a previous database we had at Google called DataStore, and then Firebase, real-time database. And so Firebase, if you don't know, has a lot of like developer tools for mobile and web apps. Love the whole team at Firebase and the products they put out. And they had a real-time database that was based on JSON. And so basically, I know putting a lot of terms out there, but the main thing to take away here is Firestore, super high scalable, like a document database, serverless database DB, so database, so it scales up and down. But you also can, it does like real, you can also talk to it from clients, which means you can really simplify your development. And it also does cool things like real-time syncing, right? So one client chases some value, and like within a second, all the other clients who are listening to it like get an update and a notification. And you can really simplify your development with Firestore and Firebase tools. What else did you say? We have serverless tools for like machine learning. So if you're doing TensorFlow or those sort of things, we've got serverless tools. Like it's called AI Platform that scale up to do all of your training. And this is a very spiky workload, right, with machine learning, because you like, hey, go analyze these like 10 million images to like do, you know, to learn how to solve some problem. So that's a lot of work to do upfront. And then, but once you're done training, right, you want to scale that all back down to zero. And then now your serverless is like the prediction. So a request comes in, hey, you solved this problem for me. Okay, cool, I'll solve it. Here's your response. And that scales serverlessly, just like, you know, incoming requests to a FAS. So data, machine learning, big data, you mentioned BigQuery. So that was also kind of a serverless tool before sort of serverless became a popular term. You just write standard SQL and it can query just massive data sets, gigabytes, petabytes of data, you know, in just seconds or minutes. And it works very serverlessly. Like you don't provision, you don't have to provision any infrastructure. You don't have to manage anything. It just scales it all up behind the scenes. And some people have kind of even tricked it into being like almost this like sneaky little FAS, because you can now write user-defined functions. So you could write a little JavaScript function that runs on every record. And so, you know, it's, well, now it's starting to blur the line, I guess, between where's your FAS and your database. So a lot of tools around, yeah, big data, machine learning, databases, and compute on Google Cloud.
That's awesome. All right. Well, listen, I mean, I think that, you know, Google has a ton of great stuff when it comes to the serverless things. I really am a big fan of this Cloud Run thing. I think for certain types of workloads, and certainly if you are building, you know, things that need special hardware, or even if you're just using the managed version of it, I think there's a lot of these workflows where this concurrency model could be really, really interesting. So anyways, listen, Brett, thank you so much for being here. You know, obviously you're always out there speaking, and as you said in the beginning, you know, people can contact you. So how would they do that?
Yeah, best way is probably on Twitter. I'm at Brett MCG, BRETMCG. On Twitter, that's probably the best way to get a hold of me. You know, send me a message. I'd love to hear what you're doing. I also recently have started co-hosting a video series called The Serverless Toolbox. So if you go to serverlesstoolbox.com, we have some episodes about doing serverless things, mostly around GCP. So our first episode, for example, is I want to create a REST API to serve out some data, but instead of being backed by a database, I actually want it to be backed by Google Sheets, because it's just so easy to like have anyone in your org set up permissions, go in there and just change data. So it's a very fun, like kind of a little bit silly, lighthearted series. We've got props and costumes and things. So check that out at serverlesstoolbox.com, or you can reach me at BrettMCG on Twitter.
And if they want to find out more about just what Google has to offer from a serverless standpoint, it's cloud.google.com/serverless, right?
Yep. That is the landing page. Would love to hear your feedback.
Perfect. All right. I will get all that in the show notes. Thanks again.
All right. Thanks, Jeremy.
This week's Serverless Chat. I want to give a huge thank you to Brett McGowan for being my guest this week. If you want to check out the show notes and a full transcript of this episode, you can find them at serverlesschats.com/22. For more Serverless Chats, be sure you subscribe and rate the show in iTunes, Stitcher, or any of your favorite podcast apps. You can also connect with me on Twitter at Jeremy_Daily. And if you're interested in serverless and want to discover all the great new articles, use cases, and latest innovations from the serverless community, make sure you subscribe to the Off by None newsletter at offbynone.io. Thank you so much for joining me, and I look forward to chatting with all of you again next week.